With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A little bit more like it. From the Lightning, it's the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Justin Cuthbert back with you to recap the Tampa Bay Lightning's 4-2 victory over the New York Islanders in Game 2, evening their semifinal series at a game apiece. And I think there's two reasons why we probably shouldn't be surprised by the result, at least historically, beyond the fact that the Lightning are, well, the Tampa Bay Lightning. One is we just don't see them lose consecutive games in the postseason, at least in the last two postseasons. They are now 12-0 after a loss, outscoring opponents 40 to 21. So basically 2-1. And to cement that, they are basically unbeatable when they score first, and they scored first in game two versus the Islanders. They are now 9-1 in their last 10 postseason games when they are striking first. But, you know, to actually dig into this game specifically, I thought there were a couple important developments for the Lightning. One, they just did a much better job on the attack. I'm not sure why it looked so much different from them through neutral ice and while they were trying to gain the attacking zone, but it was truly night and day in terms of how they broke down the Islanders' structure. And two, and maybe the most important thing, even if it didn't directly provide them with the advantage tonight, they seemed to remove some of the discipline from the Islanders game. I mean, the Islanders weren't that saintly in game two. And I think a lot of that was due to the fact that the Lightning put a lot of pressure on the Islanders offensively, but also because they dragged them into the mud a little bit. We saw a lot of weird scenarios because there were a lot of penalties. There were a lot of penalties on both sides. There were a lot of, well, we'll talk about the even up calls later, but a lot of coincidentals, a lot of, you know, penalty here, penalty there, even up calls, a lot of weird things going on, and it led to some weird scenarios and scenarios that are outside the 5-on-5 normal condition, which the Islanders thrive in. We saw 4-on-3s, we saw 4-on-4s, we saw power plays, lots of scenarios that theoretically would give an advantage to Tampa Bay. Now, we found ourselves in a game like that because, mainly because of the referees. They had a poor night, it seemed, and I think most of the criticism around them stems from one call against Tampa Bay, actually, and it was Adam Pellick shoving Braden Point into Semyon Varlamov on what was sort of a almost breakaway that didn't materialize, but still Pellick had some urgency in his game and was forced to push Braden Point from behind into his own goaltender. It was a bad call on the ice because really there was nothing Braden Point could do. And if we have the benefit of watching the play over and over again, you can sort of realize that. But it was a tough call in the moment because, you know, he barreled into the goaltender. Let's be honest. He barreled in because he was pushed, but he barreled in nonetheless. And when you don't make a movement, whether it's, you know, extend your arms or try to move to the side or something, usually you're flagged or tagged with an infraction because you went in so hard. But I think really, if you look at it and if the referees had a discussion on the ice, they probably would have decided that he went in that way because he was forced to go in that way and he couldn't do anything about it. Interestingly though, the rule of thumb is that you never push a member of the opposition into your own goaltender because it is a highly dangerous play. And it did knock Varlamov out of the game momentarily as concussion spotters pulled him from the ice, but it did pay off for the Islanders because they avoided that scoring chance and they avoided a penalty, actually earning a power play themselves because Braden Point went to the box, and the Islanders actually tied the game with that power play opportunity on a Brock Nelson goal. another one for him. But it seemed that incident had repercussions elsewhere because it sort of got the referees more involved. It sort of became a little bit more scrappy based on what happened, probably. But again, it got a little weird, and then the game got taken out of its normal setting. And I mentioned how, you know, those situations would probably benefit Tampa Bay, but it actually did not play out that way. Both teams did have a power play goal, and the Islanders scored at 4-on-4, I believe, late in the game on a Matt Barzal goal. And the Lightning, three of their four goals came at even strength. Well, two of them came at even strength. One actually came at a 7-on-5 scenario, but more on that in a second. But what I think those power plays did, and those 4-on-4s and 4-on-3s and all these different things and different looks that we saw, I think it helped set the tone for the Lightning. It helped the big guys get their motor started a little bit. They seemed to be feeling themselves a little bit more as they got to work on their creativity and sort of do what they do best. And, you know, before long, it seemed like they were in a position or a better position to factor on the score sheet, which they did, in fact, do. Two guys, again, were the catalyst offensively for Tampa Bay. No surprise, it's Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point. Kucherov had three primary assists in the game, two of which were absolutely sublime. The first was on Braden Point's ice-breaking goal in the game. Just a beautiful instance of deception and skill with a behind the net feed to Point out in front of the net, sort of acting like he was going to go one way, but turning his wrists over and firing a perfect pass, sort of backdoor, I guess not backdoor, but against the seam to Braden Point. And then maybe on his second assist, his second primary assist, maybe the best hold-up play you will see in sports this month, and that's saying something because we're going to see the best strikers in the world playing at Euro 2020. But Nikita Kucherov did what Olivier Giroud wishes he could do with some brilliant work, just holding onto the puck a little bit longer, a dip here, a shake there, or a shake against a defenseman there, and it gave enough time for his line mates to catch up. Andre Palat, in particular, caught up and received a pass from Kucherov after his solo dangles in the offensive zone to put the Islanders back up, and they would not relinquish that lead. That, though, was the 7-on-5 goal, and the Islanders were incensed by it, naturally, because it was a bit of a sloppy change. I don't know if it really affected the goal that much, because Kucherov was on an island for a bit, and Palat was coming off the bench for players that had completed their change. But the defensemen were still trying to get off the ice, it seemed, and, you know, they have reason to be incensed when seven skaters are on the ice for a goal, but I don't really think it changed much from the play. So I don't really feel like I'm going to lose sleep for Barry Trotz tonight. Again, I guess he has reason to be a little upset, and maybe the referees will continue to be kind on the Islanders based on that clear missed call. It is interesting, though, because Braden Point is the other guy I mentioned as sort of the leaders offensively, and I think he would actually be my Conn Smythe Trophy guy in the event the Lightning do go on to win consecutive Stanley Cups. And that is despite the incredible point totals that Kucherov is putting up right now. But Point, you know, we got to give him his credit. Goals in three straight for him, 7 of his last 8, and he now leads the postseason with 10 goals. And beyond that, I feel like Point this year is to the Lightning what Hedman was to the Lightning last summer. I mean, he just seems like he's always involved. He's always involved in the good things. He's the motor for this team, the engine, the guy that serves to be sort of the driving force behind it all. And for that reason, I think I would prefer him over Kucherov. But that seems crazy, because if it does go that way, and again, if we might be getting ahead of ourselves, well, we surely are getting ahead of ourselves here. But if that happens and Lightning win again and Point is acknowledged for his brilliant postseason, and he was right in the mix last year as well, we'd be overlooking Kucherov again and his prodigious point totals again. Going back to last season, he now has 59 points in 39 postseason games, all in the last calendar year. Just unbelievable. You talk about relying on your big guys to come up with points and goals and production, steady, always, always there for you when it matters most. Nikita Kucherov is doing that in spades. Another positive development for the Lightning would be the fact that they got some goals from their defense corps. Jan Ruta broke what was a pretty everlasting seal for a while, scoring the first goal from a Lightning defenseman in these playoffs, and then Victor Hedman followed that up after, I think he scored 10 goals in the bubble last year, just himself. So he followed that up. So now they have two. It's a long way from the 17 they scored last summer, but an important development nonetheless. They need more scoring, the Lightning do, because as much as Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov have carried the load mostly themselves, they got to find ways to get more scoring from more able bodies. The fact that we've gone this long without mentioning Andrei Vasilevskiy is probably a disservice to him, despite how good the Lightning were and how they were able to implement their game more so than they did in game one. The Islanders were also doing exactly what the Islanders wanted to do. They generated a lot of quality looks from a lot from offensive zone cycles and sustained offensive zone pressure. It seemed like they were getting the opportunities to fire hard shots at and through traffic and with Vasilevskiy in a bit of a vulnerable position. And he stood tall. I mean, a lot of those attempts were blocked, and not, it didn't mean that he had, you know, these a crazy amount of saves and a crazy amount of hard work to do. But I think he had better numbers than, or better performance rather, than his numbers would indicate after the game. And he did make one just absolutely brilliant save on Kyle Palmieri early in the game. And that's, I mean, we could kind of expect Vasilevskiy to do that at least once in every postseason game. Also worth mentioning is Yanni Gourde, the third line center for the Tampa Bay Lightning, did not see a single shot attempt against in his over 12 5-on-5 minutes. That line with Coleman and Gaudreau have been drawing the third line or the second identity line of the Islanders so far in this series, with Palmieri, Pageau, and Travis Zajac. And they, you know, they had the most trouble getting through. Obviously, if Gourde didn't allow a single shot attempt, they didn't produce much in those minutes against Gourde or anything at all. But he sort of had a, he saw a little bit of everyone, it seemed, in the game, and it didn't affect his performance or his effectiveness out there. That third line for Tampa has been a large part of their story coming together before the bubble playoffs last year, and they continue to be a major factor now, with Yanni Gourde having a great night and Leo Komarov not really having a great night. He had a couple tussles with Gourde, and it seemed like the Lightning center got the best of those. At a very basic level, though, it just seemed that the fire burned a little hotter for the Lightning in this game. It was clear which team was more desperate, which team had to make adjustments to, which team had to, you know, had a point to prove, I guess, which team could not afford to fall behind 0-2 with both of its opening games coming on home ice. I thought this was the well-crafted counterpunch that we'd come to expect from the Lightning, an elite team and an elite coach in John Cooper. We'll leave it at that. Not much on the Islanders today. A lot of Lightning talk, but this game was certainly about the Lightning bouncing back and getting one win on home ice before it shifts to Nassau Coliseum. That game will happen Thursday night, and on Wednesday night, Montreal will look to salvage one game in their set against Vegas. Might be a tall task given the situation that they have on defense, but perhaps Jeff Petrie will be back in the lineup, and that will be important to them. We will break down that game Wednesday, and we will break down game three between the Islanders and Lightning on Thursday night.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.